Welcome to the 39th Monkey on My Back podcast. Feed your geek addiction at momcomics.com, where you'll find a tree, and you'll say, "What's a tree doing on a comic book blog? That's strange and out of place." Tonight on the pod, we talk about our spinning orders, and in the spotlight, James talks about the Joss Whedon run of Astonishing X-Men. Momcast, the Vuvuzela of comic book podcasts. Around the table tonight are... That's James.
Hello, I'm Jane.
And I'm Nick. And James, the person who was the Vuvuzela just then, managed to misspell Joss Whedon after asking for two different spellings. Having me say it to him with the book in front of him.
That is really tragic.
Just for clarification, can I say it's W-H-E-D-O-N? There's no A in there.
No, there's no A in there.
You wanted an A in there.
Yeah.
Do you think it's better than A?
I'd like an A in there, really. I'd be more comfortable with him. Maybe I'd enjoy Buffy more if there was because I don't like Buffy very much.
Don't blame your spelling on Buffy.
Okay, what should I blame it on?
I don't know, years and years of awful, awful British education.
My education was... Don't blame British education, just blame my education was not good. Mostly because I zoned out for about 15 years.
All 15 years?
Yep.
That's excellent.
Yeah, which means I had about 3 more years than most people.
Yeah, but you ignored them. You ignored 3 more. You were ignoring it so much that you were still turning up at school and not paying any attention to them 3 years after.
James,
you're
23. You should no longer be coming to a primary school.
You're 23.
You'd end up
after 15 years of education.
Yeah, I was 23 after 15 years after education.
I'm confused. My education wasn't great either.
Sure.
I didn't do much learning.
You've got a degree, though, haven't you?
Yeah, but...
Tell us what your degree's in.
My degree's in media with culture studies.
Okay, that's good.
Why did... You looked uncomfortable when you were saying...
Because it's made up. Anything... At the point when you're studying media studies, okay, we're at a point now where that's been around long enough that it's kind of an accepted subject. Mm. This was 20 years ago, though. Yeah. Media itself was one of those not a proper subject degrees. But then when you add a with something, 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 what you're basically saying is this is for the people who don't have the focus to do an actual media degree itself. They need to have other stuff added to it.
Subscribe to that course because the degree in A-team studies was full up?
They didn't have degrees in A-team studies back then, James. It was a different time. It was a primitive, barbaric time.
I bet they do now. People have to pay for their degrees, though.
You can get a degree in surfing.
Well, no, that's okay. I mean, that's a web practical, surfing. That's a practical thing.
Actual surfing.
Surfing's good, though. It's a nice activity. You could teach other people how to surf once you've got that degree. I think that's a good thing.
But actual degree, you'd spend all that money.
Yeah, 3 years studying surfing. I think that's time well spent.
Okay.
I'm not sure if he's being serious, listener.
Yeah, he's not being serious.
I'm not being serious.
Now you sound like a wildlife presenter.
Sounded a little bit like a sex offender, actually.
never mind.
Most sex is offensive if you're doing it properly, surely.
If you're doing it what?
Especially properly. When it's in Front magazine.
Shut up. It's for my wife.
Okay.
Right, so, what have you guys been up to this week?
This week, I've been watching lots and lots of World Cup games.
Jane, what have you been doing?
This is football 3 zone.
That was the dopiest look I've ever seen.
For me?
Yeah. You had a really weird look on your face when you laughed then, it freaked me out a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
It was like your brains had dropped out. So what have you been doing this week?
I went treasure hunting with the Moomins. That was...
Didn't we establish...
Horrible fascist Moomins.
Yeah. Not.
Didn't we get into trouble for saying that the Moomins were
you
fascist?
You guys did, yeah. Because the Moomins aren't.
Yeah, because at the moment with all of their friends are very... They're all white!
Yeah, that's
Everyone in their world is white, even Snot Maiden.
Okay. It's Snot Maiden. But so that was... And that went okay. Presumably there wasn't any trouble because the Moomins wouldn't have been any good in a fight, I don't think.
No, they're fine.
They're bulky, I don't know. You know,
they can roll over somewhere.
They're sturdy little buggers, yeah.
We didn't find any treasure. I did end up going on a twist because I've been haunted by a green light since Monday.
A green light?
Yes.
Doesn't that mean go? Good. That's good. I think that's a positive thing, a green
light.
Not
when you're trying to get to sleep.
Where's the green light coming from, do you know?
My bedroom ceiling.
Oh, you've so that's a fire alarm.
That would be a
Also, it's
fire
a real
alarm.
Thing.
It's a real thing. Right. I've really been haunted by a green light since Monday.
It's been an unusual evening preparation for this because Jane and James were being a little bit prickly with each other but didn't really know why. And then Jane explained that it's because James apparently was in a dream and was mean to you or something.
I find it hard to believe I was more mean to you in your dream than I am in real life as well.
I take my dreams quite seriously.
Obviously.
If someone stabs me in my dream, I find it hard to talk. Oh, God. I'm just... Never mind.
That's okay. What's James been up to this week?
Apart from what, I'm not allowed to talk about.
No, not allowed to talk about that.
Not an awful lot, actually. I've done very, very little indeed.
Yeah.
I ate pizza with you. I had the delight of Jane's company the other day while we watched... something on TV.
And you tormented me most of the evening.
Did I? What did I do?
Saying, taking the mickey out of me.
Did you touch your ear like that?
No. But you just did.
Neutral territory. I mean, I haven't...
The ear apparently is neutral territory.
I found this out today. Which is useful. What? I don't know. What did I say to you? I don't remember
being
that horrible to you.
You were teasing me about something I was ordering. You kept saying, oh, it's not there. It's not in stock. They're just pretending and stuff.
Oh, a thing that you're buying for a friend of yours for an event.
Oh, yeah. I ordered a stupid amount of stuff off Amazon the other day, actually. It was very exciting. Because I had vouchers for my birthday. I've obviously got bored of what you two were talking about and decided I was going to talk about my week.
Not as bored as we'd got.
And my week pretty much consisted of ordering some stuff off Amazon, which is a bit tragic.
No.
And writing thank you cards. And what was the other thing? Oh, L Word. We've been watching the last series of the L Word.
How many series
Lesbians,
are there?
People. I think six.
Is there six series?
I've been watching a lot of Father Ted this week, actually.
Have you?
Yeah, a lot of it.
It Crowd. New series of It Crowd's coming soon. Should be quite exciting.
I've set that up to be recorded.
I didn't say that because I didn't want to talk about what James was talking about anymore. There's the connection, obviously, that I didn't just say, oh, I don't want to talk about Father Ted anymore.
No, I'm aware of the connection.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure.
I was listening to it with Graham Linehan's commentary as well, which is most insightful.
He was in the room.
Yeah, he was standing next to my bed. I tell you what, that's a really nice way... If you want to go to sleep, not that his commentary is boring, but he's got a lovely Irish accent.
If he's in the corner of the bedroom.
Yeah. I'm just going to stand over here, James. Talk about Father Ted while you go to... Didn't mean to wake you.
This bit, we really did have a lot of rabbits.
That's it. Go to sleep. Roll over now. There, I can see a big hairy bottom. That's the sort of things he was saying to me.
I'm impressed by Nick's ability to do accents.
Was that an accent? I realised midway through that I don't know how to do accents at all.
You were quite... good.
Thank you. My abiding memory of Father Ted, my favourite memory, is the one with the rabbits. I love the one with the rabbits. Where he brings one in, Dougal brings one rabbit in, and then every time they turn around and look at them, there's more rabbits. Yeah.
It's a bit like The Trouble with Tribbles, isn't
it? Yeah, it is a lot like The Trouble with Tribbles. Yes. Maybe it was a reference to The Trouble with Tribbles.
Maybe it's a reference, an homage, as I believe you're meant to call them.
Did you see the picture of... One thing I did this week is I shared a picture of... that I found on the internet of Superman and Batman, and Batman's pregnant, and Superman's touching the fact that someone had drawn. And no, don't go up, because it was one of the most disturbing pictures I've ever seen, so I shared it with the rest of the people I knew.
But it's a beautiful thing, pregnancy, isn't it?
Not when it's Batman who's pregnant and Superman's got his hand like Superman's the father. That's just weird.
That's quite cute.
Yeah,
no,
like
because
that.
Superman could not have a baby with a normal human being. He wouldn't be able to do it.
But Batman's not a normal human
being.
It's
never been
he's
established he's got super sperm, has it?
Hmm?
It's never been established he's got super sperm.
Well, no, but he must do. He's got super everything else.
They probably wouldn't be able to carry his child, but I don't think his sperm is necessarily...
His ejaculation would perforate the fuck out of them. There was an article about it in a respected medical journal 20 or 30 years ago. I think it was Penthouse.
Wow.
I don't believe that for a minute. I think he'd be able to control it. Lois looks all right, and you're not telling me after 70 years that that relationship has not been consummated.
Kryptonite condom. He'd have to use a kryptonite condom, but that would kill him.
Exactly, that's ridiculous. Man, why can't he just control the power of his ejaculate?
Danger sex.
That is danger sex. Having sex with Spider-Man?
Having sex with Spider-Man, apparently, in Marvel comics a couple of years ago, they established in a vision of the future that Spider-Man's radioactive spider blood would also make his radioactive sperm... his sperm radioactive, and that would give Mary Jane cancer. It was probably actually a bit of a relief after that they wrote the whole marriage thing out, I think.
Yeah, Brand New Day makes a lot more sense now, doesn't it?
Actually, yeah. I'm not sure if that might have been a story that came afterwards. I don't know, really. But, yeah, which was a bit of a weird thing. It's a bit weird.
It is a bit weird.
Because there was a whole thing where he was talking about his poisonous radioactive seed or something crawling inside her like spiders. Not actually saying it was sperm they were talking about, but it was obviously sperm they were talking about. It was gross.
Can we stop talking about superheroes having sex?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure a whole chunk of what I was saying then was just lifted wholesale from a Kevin Smith movie.
I think the Superman sperm
kryptonite
thing.
Condom, I think, is a Jason Lee delivered line.
I think it's more rats.
More rats, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I love that film. I love the bit where Stan Lee goes, I didn't notice it until I watched the commentary, but there's a bit where Stan Lee looks like he's going away from their conversation, and then he gets distracted. And then when he goes off in a completely other direction. Apparently Stan Lee can't take direction, so he just forgot where he was supposed to be going.
And apparently read all of his lines for that film off cue cards as well.
And probably, he's a very old man. He was born a very old man.
He was, absolutely. But I think he was 74 when he was born, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he stayed 74 for most of his career.
So he's doing really well.
Yeah.
I think well done, Stan Lee.
Well done, Stan Lee. We like
Momcast
you.
Momcast endorses you. That's going to be good news to him, actually, isn't it?
It will. He's had a hell of a time.
He has, yeah. It's not been easy for him, is it?
No, it ain't.
Okay.
Should we talk about comics?
Yeah, go on in.
Yeah, looks like I'm first.
Yeah, you are first
in the spinning orders, Jane.
Okay. Not much in the comic shop this week, was there?
There was lots, but there wasn't lots.
Okay, not much.
There wasn't much new comics.
Yeah.
No, it was quite weak, eh?
So I picked up a random called The Killer. Modus Vivendi. I've probably pronounced that completely wrong.
I think, is it Latin or
Spanish?
Spanish. That was going to be my next guess.
It looks like
who's it by?
It's Spanish. It's by the right. It's written by Mads. Hmm. That's it. Just Mads and Luc Jacquemont.
that sounds about right. Luc Jacquemont. See, if you say it in an accent, it sounds like you're pronouncing it properly.
But I'm English. I'm ignorant.
It's translated by the man who wrote it.
So nothing. I was looking the other way.
Yeah.
It's translated by the man who wrote it as well.
It's translated comic. It really, there's the cover that really struck me. There's nothing particularly outstanding about it. It's just, I just saw this, it was just a crocodile.
Is it like a crocodile eating a thing?
A cross, or a cross and a chain, which I thought, that looks a bit weird. What's that all about?
Yeah, crocodiles like to eat rosaries, though, don't they? It's part of their staple diet.
I did not know this.
It started in the 17th century with a proliferation of Catholic missionaries. And at that point, I think the crocodiles enjoyed eating the missionaries, but I think they found the rosary was like a sorbet for them between...
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Cleanses
the palate.
Are you sure it's part of their staple diet, or it's just what they eat when they can't get staples?
I'm not sure what they do when they can't get staples. I'm not sure.
That was awful.
Yeah, I couldn't resist.
Shake your
head
on that.
Thank you.
That reminds me, I've started making dad jokes.
Already?
Yeah. I've been making dad jokes for about the last 10 years.
I was at work yesterday. I had a horrible moment. Sorry, Jane. I had a horrible moment of clarity at work where one of my colleagues was choking. And I said to her, shall I call you a doctor? And she said, yes, please. And I said, you're a doctor.
Did they die?
No, she just looked at me like I was pond scum.
That's not even a dad joke. That's a drunk uncle who thinks they're funny joke.
A drunkle.
A drunkle, yeah, one of them.
But a drunkle's just a dad who never had a kid of their own, though, surely.
Oh, I've known uncles with children.
Oh, okay, that's fair. But so anyway, this book that has is there an actual crocodile or a rosary in it, or any staples?
Well, that there's no staples, but the rest
might
happen.
What's holding the book together, then?
God. This isn't... We think
we're being so fucking
funny. You wonder
funny.
Why it's been prickly today.
we're going to listen back to this and think... What the fuck were we talking about?
Listener, you only have to put up an hour for this. I have to put up with it all day. So I want to take these staples out.
Your comic. You read it?
I did read it from cover to cover.
That's the best way, generally.
It's about a retired hitman who's retired quite young, and for some reason, he's not quite sure why, but he's decided to take on a job and get back into it. He explains early on that he wants for nothing. He's got so much money. He's got a young family.
He sounds a bit smug.
Yeah, he is a bit smug, actually. Rightly so. He's quite cool. Mm. And he's just referred to as the killer, as the title of the comic indicates. And so he's not really sure why he's he's gone back into this, but he's taken these jobs. And they go for the styles that he kills them, which are quite good. Everything you could expect from a hitman. And a little bit more, yeah. But the last one he struggles with. And this leads on to what is obviously going to be the ongoing story about this. Nothing superhero about it. Nothing supernatural about it, apart from being about hitman, which isn't your everyday thing. But
they're not superpowered.
It could be. I don't know. Well, it could be later on.
So just a sort of pulp story.
It was nice. It was... obviously, it's translated. The translation is brilliant. The speech bubbles I struggled with a bit because they're a bit all over the place, but not very, you can't really tell. Some of them overcross on other panels, so you're not sure where it's coming from. So that took a little bit getting used to sort of take it in. But it meant you took in the artwork a bit more, which I go into the artwork, which I really, really like on this comic.
It's very pretty.
It's extremely pretty. It's how I'd think South America would look, the comic's set in South America. It's how I feel South America would look. The colours...
The colour's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It's really good. It's interesting. I mean, it's a good scene setter. I am intrigued to find out what happens. It'll be a bit of a slow mover just from this first issue, but definitely want to know what happens. There's a nice underlying. There's a couple of underlying stories already set in this, which they set the scene quite well for these. So it'd be interesting to see where it goes.
Does the job actually go bad, or does he have a moral problem with it? Or obviously, you don't go into detail.
It's not even a moral. It doesn't go bad, and there isn't really a moral problem as such. Not as obvious as you would feel there would be about the person he has to assassinate.
Right.
It's a different undercurrent issue that he has with it, which leads to them sort of looking into it a bit more, which leads on to the development of the story. It's obviously been ongoing. I mean, you know, I'm not the one that goes to the mainstream stuff in the shop, so, and this did take me a little while to
be
settle on.
I see what you mean about the speech bubbles. Just to explain that they don't have a line around them, and I think all of the speech bubbles, the captions are just white boxes, and so are the speech bubbles. Mm.
Apart from the little...
You've just got the little tail when it's actually speech. And they don't do anything to differentiate it. When there's a light section in the art or white section in the art, the boxes kind of fade
really...
into them a little bit, don't they? So it can be a bit difficult. But it is really pretty.
Yeah, the panelling's lovely. The panelling's set really well, but with the speech bubbles, some of them overlap. You have to sort of see where they're pointing out and then... Because some of you are like, well, that doesn't make sense. Oh, yeah, because I missed that part out. But the artwork's really, really pretty. I really like it. It's really... It is very South American. I know
it's
that
very
sounds,
green.
Yes. Yeah. It's even...
Lots of greens and oranges and browns, aren't there?
Just, the scenery and even the people as well is... I've been drawn spectacularly, so...
But it's... I mean, the characters are kind of... Although the locations and the vehicles and stuff are all... quite realistically rendered. The characters are quite, not cartoony, but his almost face is quite simple, yeah, like expressionistic and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like the mix in it. And the colours are, yeah, the colouring section on this as well. We don't often talk about the colourists, but who, I don't know who the colourists
are. It might just have been, because it might just have been the...
Right, I think it was who illustrated it.
Yeah, illustrated by Luke Jackman. Yeah. The other thing I guess it's because American comics, American printers are geared up to that sort of size, but it's always a bit strange because it's obviously been the art's obviously all been designed for like a more slightly more square page, hasn't it? So it looks like, again, we've said about this before, it's been reduced a little bit, and you've got this weird white border at the bottom and top.
It's
I'd quite like squarer books.
That would be quite cool.
Or maybe just printed in the more A4 format. I'd be happy with that.
But it's not, like I said, it was written well, it's very beautifully illustrated, but it was the intrigue and where this is going to go next that made me want to talk about it. It wasn't just the fact it was the only thing I picked up, because there's obviously other things I could have spoken about, but it was just a bit, oh, okay, that wasn't completely epic, but I really want to know what's going to happen next, so... Are you gonna, worth a flick through, if not a buy.
Are you going to put it on a spinning order? Or are you going to go in a couple of months' time, see number three, and get all stressed out?
I will.
I had that very thing happen to me today, actually. Who's it on? It's Archaea or something, isn't
Archaea
it?
Archaea or something, yeah. Who I don't know. I don't know their stuff. I guess maybe they do translations and stuff.
But it can be procured from Archaea.com, can it not?
Yes.
Yes. As well as...
How are you spelling it?
Comic shop.
Archaea.
.com.
Papa.
.com.
Kaka.
Kaka. Kaka.
What is that?
She enjoyed the football the other... Ooh.
You're allowed to talk about it. It's just not very interesting.
I wasn't really watching. We may have been in the same room when there's a TV playing... A favourite game that's quite popular at the moment, and
the TV was playing a transvestite was playing.
Yeah. Transvestite
was playing soccer.
You don't see very many transvestite soccer players, do you?
And there are two things I took away from the game we watched, which was my cock and caca, caca,
caca.
Because the commentator couldn't pronounce the names quite correctly, so he kept going my cock.
Yeah, every time Mike Conn got the ball, it sounded like you were saying my cock is on the ball.
And
Kaka.
Kaka. He kept saying, Kaka, Kaka.
Because his name sounds like a noise a parrot might make.
Or like Kaka, which is poo-poo.
It is poo-poo, yeah.
Kaka.
Yes.
But you like that comic, The Killer.
I did like it, yes.
Can I talk about my comics now?
Yeah, go on.
Right, okay. I got Deviate number 3. Part 3 of 8, Gods and Monsters, by Brian Wood and Rebecca Isaacs.
You kept your word, because you told Brian Wood you were going to buy that.
Yes, I did. I mentioned it, didn't I? It's really good. It's possibly, because this is the third issue, the first one was all very unusual and new, and I hadn't really seen Rebecca Isaacs' work before, and I hadn't seen Brian Wood writing Deviate before, so... The first one was all the shock of the new, trying to work out what was going on and being really intrigued. The second one was a bit more comfortable and a bit more intriguing. This third one, it was still a really good read, but obviously we're at a point now where you kind of know what's going on, and we're probably nearing the end of the first act of whatever this 8-part story is going to be. But it's still really interesting. We're seeing what each member of Deviate is doing on this new planet. New planet where there are all these tribes and each of the members of Deviate is seen as a god. The art's still gorgeous, the writing's still really good. It's a really interesting take on what was quite an interesting power set. The Deviate characters always had quite unusual, interesting powers based around pain and empathy and all sorts of odd stuff. So it's interesting. It's a really interesting comic and I like it. It's not like an action fest or anything, but then, you know, enough people know Brian Wood stuff now to know that's not really what you get with him. Not in the books where you don't get it. I think Northlanders and Deviate are probably have a bit more sort of kinetic stuff going on.
Depends on Northlanders, doesn't it? Some of the stories have an awful lot of action, quite visceral. Some of them are very still, very considered pieces, aren't they? And I think that's what I like. He changes pace really beautifully, actually. They're really well thought out, really paced, well-paced stories.
I think because the last Northlander stuff I read was the second trade. I don't think there's been a third one yet, has there?
It will come out soon. It'll be The Plague Widow.
And, yeah, the second one was just all violence, pretty much. It was the one guy with fighting a terrorist war against the Vikings, I think.
Wasn't Sven the Return or something, was it?
Might have been. He had his daughter with him. And
was it one man against a...
Yeah, he was basically terrorising them across the British countryside, I think. Okay.
I think it was
the most depressing comic ever.
I think there might be four, actually, now The Plague Widow's out, because I think the third one is a collection of one- and two-part stories.
All right, I need to find those, because I thought I had everything tradey that was out. But that isn't the book I was talking about. I was talking about Deviate. No, that was my fault. I got sidetracked. And Deviate is very good. Another comic I've been talking about a lot, New Mutants, number 14, by Zeb Wells and a couple of different artists, Ibrahim Robeson and Lan Medina and Nathan Fox. Because of the nature of the story being part of this big epic crossover, there are two or three different threads going through this book, and each one is kind of drawn by a different artist. It's chapter 11 of the Second Coming thing that's running through the X-Books.
Is that the event that's happening?
Yeah. Which I've mentioned the last few issues of New Mutants have all taken part in this. There's very little actual New Mutants stuff going on in the actual New Mutants characters are scattered across two or three different threads that are going on in this storyline at the moment. Basically, this guy called Bastion has trapped pretty much all of the remaining mutants left on Earth in this dome, this impenetrable dome over the San Francisco Bay Area. And he has created a portal to this future where there are these mutant-hunting robots that are all pouring through, killing...
Not sentinels, different...
They are sentinels. They're a particular sort of sentinel called Nimrods. But they're like, yeah, which is a funny name. But they're more adaptive even than Sentinels. And so they're pouring through. So the Cyclops has sent one team of people into the future on a suicide mission to close this gate. But it's not really a suicide mission because Wolverine's on the team, so you know that he's gonna make it back at least.
He'll be alright, yeah.
And so there's lots going on in this, and actually it's on the one hand, the cynic in me says that I hate this sort of thing because it's really unfair on the person who just wants to read New Mutants, more so than in previous issues. You're really just getting a cross-section of a whole bunch of different stories that are like story arcs that are running through this crossover. At the same time, though, it's a really epic, sort of horrible, convincing as a bunch of mutants like fighting a war, but it's brutal. It's actually properly brutal. Bad things are happening. Something bad happens to Colossus in this issue, and not as bad as what happened to Nightcrawler a few issues ago. And it makes me wish I'd kind of been keeping track of the whole thing because it seems like a really cool story. However, the checklist of books you have to read to have read the whole thing is so long that I think it's probably going to be at least two or three trades worth, so I'll probably just have to wait till it's out in trade. So I wouldn't recommend picking up New Mutants number 14, even though I did really enjoy it.
Wait out the trade, eh?
Yeah, I think so. It's an epic story. I mean, the problem with the X-Men crossovers more than almost any of the other crossovers that Marvel or DC do is that you kind of know with the X-Men that no matter how much they change everything, everything is going to have to reset back at some point because the X-Men pretty much invented the boomerang death thing with Phoenix. So it's sort of who isn't back as it happens yet.
It'll happen.
I'm sure she will be at some point.
Give it time.
But it's good, epic stuff. Because it's fast paced, but then it's kind of like it all feels like the beginning sequence of Saving Private Ryan, which is probably a bit offensive to say because Saving Private Ryan was about an actual hideous conflict, but it's got that kind of there's no let up. That it's constant action in it at the moment, which, you know, it's only one book that I read. It's only one out of a bunch of books I read, so I can live with it being a bit hectic.
It's a very sexy cover.
The covers are really, I mean, I'm not
Rogue,
a massive...
Rogue, yeah, and who?
It's Rogue and the, what's her name, Hope? Yeah. The Hope is the a newborn mutant, the first newborn mutant since the... since the Scarlet Witch did it. but the covers have all been, I think they're all painted by... I'm starting to really warm to that sort of style. It's the guy, I think it's the guy who did the Iron Man covers, maybe? Who did Iron Man...
Okay.
The Warren Ellis Iron Man book. But it's nice. It's a nice cover.
Interiors or exteriors? Not Extremis?
Yeah.
Not Eddie Granoff?
Yeah, I think that's who did the covers.
Oh, Eddie Granoff, very... And one of my favourite artists.
Either he's getting better or I'm getting more used to his art, but I do think his covers are lovely.
I dig it. I love his stuff.
But they are, I mean, they're pin-up covers, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, big time. I think his stuff's a little bit too airbrushy, a bit too glossy for some people's liking. A bit too, and obviously he takes full advantage of digital technology, but I love his stuff. I think it's so cool.
His people do look a bit like people, even if they
big time.
Even if they all look like roughly the same people, they do look.
not as much as another artist who I love, I can think of whose characters do very
to
much.
To be fair, there's a few on there. So, but the third book I picked up today is the New Avengers number one. Yeah. Now, it's funny, I didn't pick up the John Romita Jr. That was just the Avengers that came out last week.
A couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
Obviously, this is all part of the reboot. I think what they realised was that as much as they wanted to get the main core classic Avengers back together in a book, that having Luke Cage and Spider-Man and, you know, the actual New Avengers team together, who were together a little bit before the New Avengers was a little bit before Civil War, wasn't it? I think it started just before it, a few months before it. It was too much fun having them all together as Avengers to not do it, to not carry on. Now, the interesting thing about this is that these are Avengers who've never been in the Avengers mansion before, but now they are the team that is in the mansion, and I think the other team's in the
tower.
Gigantic skyscraper skyscrapers that get knocked up in the Marvel Universe even more quickly than they do in...
Shanghai,
probably. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis... kind of know what a Brian Michael Bendis book, Avengers book, reads like by now. Although he shows a bit more restraint with the wisecracking in this one. There is a little bit, but there's some story stuff to be taken care of.
And look at the characters on the front cover. I'm not sure how does he restrain himself with the wisecracking. You've got Ben Grimm and Spider-Man on the front cover.
Ben Grimm, Spider-Man and Wolverine
you're kind of guaranteed some, aren't you? Sure.
Yeah. It is a hell of a team as well. There's Brian Michael Bendis... writing, Stuart Immonen, who is brilliant, doing the pencils. Wade Von Grohl Badger, who's an inker who of some repute, I believe. And Laura Mine, who's just an excellent colourist. She coloured Planetary and she's like a bit of a go-to colourist. It starts with Steve Rogers trying to get Luke Cage to run a team and Luke Cage being a bit pissy about it.
I'm going to ask a really stupid question. Steve Rogers, Captain America.
He was Captain America. He's
Nick Fury now.
Yeah,
but he was Captain America.
He's always been Captain America, but he's decided he's not going to be Captain America anymore.
Because he died.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's...
not such a stupid question then.
Question at all. That's something that only happened in the last few... his decision only happened in the last few months.
Yeah.
There is a... It sounds a bit cynical and shrewd of me to say that this is the book. This is the book that is the newer Avengers team rather than the classic. But there is a moment where Steve Rogers says he can run the team and he can basically have whoever he wants in the team. He sort of says you can have whoever you want in the team, but let me find the line because it's brilliant. He says. Luke Cage says, "Who do we get?" And Steve Rogers says, "Who do you want?" And then, as a quiet aside, he says, "You can't have Thor or Iron Man." which is obviously sort of setting up the difference between the two. These are the more ground-level, lower-powered superheroes, really. They're not the classic team. There's also a really cute little aside, as I said about Wolverine before. There is a panel that that I'd seen a little bit before this, where Wolverine, they're talking about Ben Grimm being in this team and in the Fantastic Four, and how he might not be able to manage it. And Wolverine says, "I'm in three teams, and I'm fine." And there's a little crack there that's quite funny as well. At the same time, there is a story in it where Damien Hellstrom, who's the son of Satan, and Dr. Stephen Strange, have been possessed by something, by some hellish things that are trying to come through. And that's basically what the conflict is in this book. One thing that's interesting, though, is Victoria, I believe her name's Victoria Brand? Agent Brand, who is Norman Osborn's right-hand man, is going to have quite an interesting role in this book. I really enjoyed it. I don't know why I didn't pick up the other Avengers book, and I did pick up this one, because I love John Romita Jr.'s art, but I think I might at least pick this one up for a few months just to get my superhero team fix, because I'm not really getting it, because Deviate is a completely different sort of thing, and the New Mutants book is mired in total war. So this one's going to be quite fun for seeing how the different characters work together. As long as there are some superheroics at some point, there is a lot of everyone getting where they need to go and stuff in this one.
Yeah,
lots of characters talking to each other, so, which is arguably what's been happening in the Marvel Universe for the last 10 years. So it's sort of,
I had to fight myself not to buy it, because that cover, you know, if you dig your superheroes, that cover's really hard to pass by, isn't it?
Hmm. It is. I mean, I think that as much as characters like Wolverine are a bit overexposed, I quite like him in this team. I quite like him in that team, and I quite like him in the original X-Men team. It's quite good seeing him.
How do we think the heroic age then's panning out? Are you enjoying what you've read of it?
It's quite bright. I mean, I know, because of the New Mutants, it doesn't really seem like we're in it properly yet. There was an advert for something in this one, though. There's a nice little précis of the Avengers history in the back with some Arthur Adams art as well. There was an advert in here somewhere for something called The Fall of the Death of Dracula or something.
Something like that,
which touts itself as the something about the heroic age being cursed by the death of Dracula or something like that, and I was like, it's only just started. What are you talking about?
I'm loving it. I've loved what I've read so far. It feels really refreshing. It's been, you know, as much as I enjoyed bits and bobs of the Dark Avengers and I enjoyed Siege, it's lovely, isn't it? It's quite refreshing at the moment.
It is kind of nice seeing these people.
Feels uplifting again, which is nice.
On the side of, you know, people actually looking up to them a little bit again. So it's good. I'm enjoying it.
Yay.
I enjoyed that anyway.
Yay for comics.
Yeah.
Cool. Yes. It's not been a great week on one count, though, because I think it was this week Al Williamson died, who is a massive tone change, isn't it? Tonal change there. I've gone straight from reviewing Heroic Age comics talking about one of the legendary comic creators dying.
See, a little bit one show, isn't it?
Sorry about that. But I wanted to get it out of the way because it is quite depressing. He was very old. He's like 79, I believe. But he was the guy whose version of the Star Wars movies, and actually in my case of Blade Runner as well, was the one we grew up with. So soon after Frank Frazetta died, Al Williamson was another artist who really defined that sort of science fiction pulpy aesthetic. Although he worked in comics an awful lot, when you think of Flash Gordon, start, you know, people like Flash Gordon, characters like Flash Gordon on covers with a woman draped over their leg. It's quite often Al Williamson art that you that you're picturing as well. Really beautifully rendered inks, and I think he did a lot of newspaper strip work as well. So he was always quite busy. He was an incredibly good artist, and it is. It's a good time to look back at his work and think about how influential he was, because as I said, I mean, he had a long career. It is very sad that he's died, and we're sorry to see him go.
Yes.
And so his Return of the Jedi adaptation, I would have been probably the first of his art I would have been exposed to. Mm. I was all over those when I was a kid.
Mm.
It's very sad, isn't it, when you see what he did do and realise how much of his stuff... I didn't realise how much of his stuff I'd actually read when I was younger. It is very, very sad.
It's very representative of a particular sort of period as well, isn't it? 70s and 80s, although I think his career went quite a bit on either side of those times. Yeah, that's definitely the period, especially for James and I. It's the period that he was working the most, I think, is when we were growing up. So.
I'd argue that was my golden age for reading comics. At a time when it was really hard to stand out as an artist as well, wasn't it? Because of the colour process and so forth. It's very sad.
But anyway, so there's that.
Yes.
Which is terrible. At the same time, we found a couple of really cute comic-related things this week. It's kind of difficult.
Not where you did.
Did I find them?
You found them, Nick, all by yourself.
It's quite difficult to explain what they are, really, because they were very much an internet-y thing. But there were two artists.
Where can you see the stuff that you found, though?
You can see them on our Tumblr, on the Momcast Tumblr account.
Momcast.tumblr.com.
I can't actually see the screen properly, but one of them is an artist who, on his LiveJournal account, is just doing these super ornate, massive scenes with dozens and dozens of characters and dozens of things going on, which are just like crazy ideas. One that I can see from here is the Marvel Universe all in Lego form. Yeah. Like all of the characters
you're
in
talking
Lego
about, versions. I think it's Ulysses Farinas.
Ulysses Farinas, yeah. That's it. But at the same time, the way that he was drawn to my attention was he did literally, I think it's a 3 or 4 page strip, which is just Lex Luthor mind controlling Superman and sending him to destroy Gotham. There is an adult content notice on his LiveJournal account. I'm not sure entirely why. I haven't seen anything particularly bad, but just really very similar to sort of a Paul Pope style, really frenetic style of art. Really big crazy ideas that they'd never do in the DC universe.
Frank Quietly.
Yeah, a little. I mean. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit wilder than Frank Quitely, because Frank Quitely's stuff was always really beautifully drafted. But the amount of detail and the stuff going on in the panels is just incredible.
That is amazing.
There's another one-page thing that goes on the principle that...
there's a monkey in one of the panels.
What was Batman's dog called? Because he's riding Batman's dog.
Is he? Because Crypto, Superman had a dog.
I can't remember Batman's dog for the life of me. That's
Did Batman have a dog?
Oh, of course. Every superhero had a dog at one point.
Oh. I did not know. I don't remember Batman's
isn't
dog.
Who had
a monkey?
Is it Super Friends or the,
the
pets?
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to forget about Super Friends for some reason. I can't imagine why. There's another... like pin-up image that he's done that's on his blog of that goes on the principle that Batman damaged by his parents' death accumulates things. So where we're used to seeing the Batcave with like lots of odd stuff going on in there.
That's the image called Batman as a Hoarder. Yeah.
That's
is
the one.
Blow your
that's ba- amazing. That is
very quietly.
Yeah.
And that is blow your brains out beautiful, isn't it?
Halfway between Frank Quitely and Jeff Darrow, there's like so much just stuff going on in there. So he's good.
It's a gorgeous image.
Definitely something you want to see when you walk. Is that a TARDIS?
That's a TARDIS.
Yay. Yeah, there's a bit of everything going on in there, I think. So yeah, we will try and post links to his stuff in an easier to find spot than on the Momcast Tumblr. But definitely go and root out his live journal. It's got some really nice stuff in it.
Well, I might nab the images and pop them up maybe on the mombcomics.com site as well.
Yeah, because they're lovely.
They are gorgeous.
I just quite like the. I mean. I dare say you're not really supposed to do your own versions of DC or Marvel characters like that, but the one thing that the internet allows is for it to happen, whether you're supposed to do it or not. And the fact that he's letting his imagination go wild and he's kind of got the art talent to run with it is just incredible.
That is incredible.
And the other thing I found is what's his name? Neil Cameron?
Cameron, yeah.
Literally found this today. He's
David's brother, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. He's done... he's got a website that is his A to Z of... It's like a geekdom A to Z. I picked out a couple where he's basically drawn an image for that particular letter. I picked out a couple. The one that we've got up on the screen at the moment is MODOK's Melancholy Mouseketeer Memories. And it's a picture of MODOK looking at... Well, it's basically what it says. But each one's... there are loads of pop culture references within them. There's an Indiana Jones one, there's a Buffy one, obviously B and I, respectively.
None of those Mouseketeers grew up well, did they?
No. It turned out badly for all of them.
Spears was a Mouseketeer, wasn't she? And what's the Aguilera, the dirty one?
Aguilera, and I think Justin Timberlake was as well.
Yeah, and MODOK as well.
I always thought Aguilera was more attractive.
Really? Than what?
Than Britney.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, but maybe it's because at the beginning of their career, Britney was still kind of doing the virgin slut thing, whereas Aguilera was doing the
slut
thing. Yeah. And but I always kind of one was the cutesy, innocent tramp, and the other one was the whore with a heart of gold. And I preferred the whore with a heart of gold for some reason.
My favourite Neil Young song.
Whore with a heart of gold.
No, just heart of gold.
Oh, okay. But yes, so if you want to see a picture of MODOK, there's a really good Galactus one as well. There's King Kong Kiss as well, which is something you wouldn't see every day. King Kong in full Kiss makeup, battling biplanes out of the sky.
That sounds pretty cool.
There's a cracking monkey.
Yeah. Yes, he was a cracking monkey.
He was.
So it's worth rooting those out again. We'll try and post links up on the website, but they're big fun.
They are.
Yeah.
They are fungasms.
Thanks,
they are.
Nick.
They are fantastic.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Nick. Yes.
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 Yeah, we are in full on one show mode now, aren't
we? Yeah, we are.
Right, now on to sheep shearing on the Shetland Isles.
I think we need to hear about what James has been talking about non-stop the last 2 weeks.
Introduce it, how it's on the running order.
I'm not... Right, I'm literally just going to say what it says, but I don't agree with it. James ruins Astonishing X-Men.
Yay!
He's not going to ruin it. He absolutely loves this to death.
Is
so.
That Astonishing X-Men by Joss Whedon?
Whedon.
Whedon.
I hate you. It's Astonishing X-Men by Joss Whedon and by John Cassidy. Collected in 4 trades at the moment. Gifted, Dangerous, Torn, and Unstoppable. It essentially collects the Astonishing X-Men from issues number 1 up until 24 and Giant Size X-Men number 1, which I think spans a couple of years, doesn't it? In the early 90s, was it?
Giant Size X-Men, yeah.
Not Giant Size X-Men, Astonishing X-Men.
Oh, Astonishing X-Men, no. Astonishing X-Men, early noughties, you mean?
Yeah, what did I say?
90s.
Did I?
I think so.
You
I feel
say
such
90s.
A fool when I listen
you
back
did
to this.
Say
luckily, at the moment, I don't. This was the series that essentially rebooted the reboot.
Yeah, it was very peculiar. Very peculiar timing on it. I guess they got Joss Whedon and he pitched the story, but it came very soon after New X-Men.
And it could not really be much more different from the densely woven story that Morrison created for the new X-Men, which I think I've said more than one occasion on this podcast, I adore.
Yeah.
That's pretty much, up until now, been my only frame of reference for X-Men. Not a book that I read when I was younger, not a book I've picked up until recently. Can I say, although I love new X-Men, for me, what's caused the penny to drop with the X-Men has been this run of Astonishing X-Men, which John, our friend who contributes from time to time to the pod, actually suggested I read. He said, if I enjoy new X-Men, maybe you should read the series that followed it straight away. What is quite nice, he gets on with the business of rebooting the story really quickly. First thing he deals with are the costumes, which I think he felt were a bit too militaristic, maybe a little bit bordering on fascistic,
yeah.
I think. Because Morrison had the team basically in black leather, which was supposed to bring the team into a new modern age. He chucks them straight back into the
basically the same spandex, outfits they were in the 90s. Not, in the 80s, actually, I think, in most cases. Yeah.
But the team is ever so slightly rebooted as well, obviously. If you've not read X-Men, New X-Men, I suggest you stop listening now. Obviously, at the end of New X-Men, Phoenix dies, Jean Grey.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Leaving the team a bit light. So he reboots with a brand new, well, not a brand new team, but he introduces an old favourite back into the team, Kitty Pryde, which I think the book really benefits from her coming in almost as an outsider.
Yeah, yeah.
Into this team. But the lineup for this set of books is essentially Wolverine, Emma Frost, Cyclops, the Beast, and Kitty Pryde. And takes it back into a, I think, as you say, it chimes, from what I'm told, with the sort of late 70s.
It's the 80s. It's the late 80s. The reason I know that, and the reason I personally have a connection with this book is, but also why I think it's a bit odd, the timing that this came after Morrison's run instead of before it, is Joss Whedon, obviously, I don't know if he and I are roughly the same age, but he obviously was reading the X-Men in the first instance and fell in love with it exactly the same time I was.
Yeah.
He was probably the same age as Kitty Pryde when she first joined the team. And she joined the team as a teenage girl, as an outsider back then, with quite an unusual, like, low yield, like, more thoughtful power than most of them had. And I get the feeling the reason the lineup is almost identical to how it was then is because that's when Joss Whedon fell for the team.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, if it wasn't so good, it'd be a little bit self-indulgent of him. And it's quite interesting that, obviously, I don't know what you're going to say about it, but it's interesting for me that this series, the Whedon Cassidy run, is kind of a love letter and refinement of the 1980s stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Grant Morrison's was really, it was like a blueprint for what comes next in the X universe. So it's weird that they had What Comes Next and then went straight back to what was.
I don't think he entirely tears that down. It's certainly the storytelling has a modern sensibility with a classic twist, maybe. And certainly you're right. Front and centre of the story is Kitty Pryde. Hers is the character that really develops the most throughout the story. Although the way he treats Scott Summers, the way he treats Cyclops is very interesting as well. But he always seems to be the one that gets the worst of most of the writer's treatment.
I can't remember how is he, because at the moment in the other X books, certainly I don't know about the main X-Men books, but in the New Mutants and the others, we're finally actually seeing, because Professor X always intended Cyclops to lead the team.
Yeah.
That was the deal, and as a kid growing up, you always thought, well, why? He's a jerk. He's like a whiner. He keeps mooning after the girl in the team. He's not a leader, really. And in the other X books, he kind of acts like a leader. Whereas in the new X-Men, he's pretty much being led around by his dick.
The new
by Emma Frost.
The new X-Men, he gets a real beating. He's having a really hard time. Doesn't get an awful lot better, but he's still being led around by his dick by Emma Frost in all of these books. Their relationship is, which is still established in the X-Men continuity at the moment.
Yeah.
Their relationship's developed a little. Kitty Pryde, though, and her relationship with her an old...
Because this is the book that reintroduces
Colossus.
Colossus.
Absolutely.
And again, that's the Marvel when I first started properly reading comics. I'd read the old X-Men in these little mini books you used to get. But around the Secret Wars, when Secret Wars was coming out in English reprints, Kitty Pryde was with Colossus, and that was my continuity. That was how it was supposed to be, because that's what I got used to. And then Colossus cheated on her with an alien floozy because Kitty Pryde wasn't in Secret Wars, and he cheated on Kitty Pryde, and she was heartbroken. And I thought he was a cad.
There are some really nice moments with them getting to know each other in this book. One of my particular favourites is they're essentially consummating their reunion. Mm. Kitty enjoys it so much she phases right through the bed and through the floor into the room underneath them, which is a really funny moment, nice note. But Colossus is central to the overarching story that appears across the 24 issues plus the giant size, which is he's prophesied to be. And again, if you've not read this is going to be a bit of a spoiler if you've only read the early issues.
Takes you to about the second book, doesn't it?
It does. I won't spoil this all the way through.
Yeah.
But essentially, he's prophesied to be the man that will essentially bring doom to Breakworld, an alien world, which I'm not sure is featured that heavily in X-Men.
No, I don't think so.
An invention of, I think of the Whedon run. Yeah. Okay, and it starts off with essentially a character called Ord, who's an agent from Breakworld that makes available a cure for the X gene. So it chimes very much with the third, certainly with the third X-Men film.
Yeah.
Only this is better.
Yeah. I think it's very solid, isn't it? I mean, I remember when each issue was coming out and it felt like a really blockbustery, but it was like it's an event is maybe overstating it. But because it's quite an old and traditional story, but it was just good.
It gets very traditional. Mm. There's a character introduced called Danger.
Oh, yeah.
Which, whilst that storyline didn't always delight me, did feel very much of the time that Whedon seems to be echoing.
It's obviously an idea he had when he was... It's obviously an idea that stuck with him from when he was... Again, when he was a kid. Because it taps into some... Not so much ancient history, but just some stuff. Yeah. That was interesting, actually, that
the
story.
The idea was clever. I don't think necessarily the payoff is massively satisfying. A lot of... Before the introduction of the character, an awful lot of suspense is built up.
Yeah.
Around one mutant in particular who's lost his powers. He's struggling to come to terms with being a normal boy again. Mm. Things happen.
Yeah.
And the characters introduced. It almost felt a little bit like not a cop-out, but it was ever so slightly disappointing. But I like the fact the character then becomes slightly peripheral, but remains in the story throughout, and is then a more enjoyable character once that storyline has played. But the introduction itself, I wasn't entirely happy with. But it's the only, for me, it was the only bum note of what was a great series.
Mm.
It builds slowly and satisfyingly to one hell of a dramatic climax in the giant size, which finished off the run.
Which, unfortunately, because I've read, I think, the first two or three books of this series, and you've got four of them there. I haven't read the last... like several issues, and Sword actually spoilers it quite badly. The Sword book that I was talking a lot about last year, or
and that,
beginning
and that,
of this
I
year.
Think that's another significant part of this
Sword
book as well. Sword's introduced in this book, and the start of Hank's relationship with, you're going to have to remind me of the name of the lady who's the leader of.
God, it was weeks,
really,
it was weeks
really
ago
putting you on the spot, aren't I? I can't remember her name. But the start of Hank's relationship with the green-haired lady from Sword.
She's not Brand, is she? No, that's... No. I get confused. There were lots of hard-ass women introduced over the last few years of the Marvel Universe who were in charge of government organisations.
And she is one of them.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
She definitely is. If we can say one thing about her conclusively, the lady whose name I don't think needs mentioning is...
I think we all know who she is.
Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah, and I don't think we need to boost her ego anymore by mentioning her in this ill-prepared review.
But John Cassaday, what do you think of John Cassaday's art? Because if
I think John Cassaday's art is very clean, it's very straightforward, and I think in this story works beautifully. It's exactly what it needs. Got another character, obviously, that's introduced, that's in mainstream continuity to, is Armour.
Yes, which is
mention her.
Which is peculiar, because she's the only addition to the new addition to the actual team, isn't she?
She's
the trainee ex-person.
Uh-huh. She is.
Who continues through to... Because Warren Ellis is now writing Astonishing X-Men.
She's part of the team at the moment.
Patchy. I'm not as sure of his run on it as I was of Joss Whedon's. Because where Joss Whedon is obviously totally in love with those characters.
Yeah.
And any weakness in the story comes from the fact that he's so in love with them, possibly. Yeah. Warren Ellis kind of sees them as a quite ridiculous delivery method for some of his deeper ideas. So, she's good. She's got really weird powers, though, hasn't she?
She has. Well, her armor's quite cool, and I love it. I mean, there's almost like a couple of coming of age stories with people at maybe different ages, different stages in their life. I think Kitty comes of age, despite the fact she's a bit more mature.
She comes back, doesn't she?
She comes out and you know really matures, maybe proves herself, if you like.
Yeah.
To the X-Men, whereas Armour, it's a more traditional coming of age, becomes an accepted part of the team, and interaction with Wolverine is lovely. Their bonding is hilarious at times.
It's funny actually, because she was the first. She was the first of the trend to have Wolverine coupled up with a quite young girl. That sounds really weird. But basically, when she first joined, I think she there were lots of points where he felt protective towards her and stuff, and she hardened up being around him. And I think that's something, because Jubilee was introduced as a kind of a replacement character to that relationship with Kitty. Sure. And I think Armour sometimes has a little bit of that with him as well. It's quite
similar to the relationship maybe in the films he's got with Rogue, eh?
Yeah, exactly. The same, actually, as the relationship he's got with Rogue. I think does Armour keep trying to get him to stop drinking in this book? She really frowns on him drinking.
I'm not sure
if it's in this book or if it's in the Wolverine one, in the Warren Ellis one.
It's not played that heavily in this one. Sorry, back to Cassaday's art, which is lovely. So I meant to say...
Oh, no, that's fine.
His art is fantastic. It works very well. It's very fresh, very clean lines. It's gorgeous to look at, but very straightforward. And again, I read it hot on the heels of New X-Men, which obviously Morrison started it with Frank Quitely, who did the first few issues. As the story progresses, his contribution gets less and less.
Yeah.
And I think the problem with New X-Men, are where the only part for me where New X-Men suffers is how choppy the art is. It changes so frequently.
And the very different styles of the people who take over as well.
But especially when you read it as a collected story, which it works fantastically as it's an incredibly immersive experience reading the New X-Men. But the art can almost be jarring at times, where it changes so much dramatically as well.
Yeah.
From one artist to the other. So this is lovely. It's obviously John Cassaday all the way through. Which makes it hang together. I have to say, because it's less of a meaty story, I think had it suffered the same chops and changes with art, it might not have hung together as well as it currently does. And I think the artist is incredibly important to this story.
I think the interesting thing about, we didn't really comment on it, the interesting thing about the Astonishing X-Men book in the first place is that it sits, although it still sits in continuity, it kind of sits in the same continuity as all of the other X-Men stuff, but at a completely different pace. It's when that came out, it was like the showcase book, and I think that, unlike the new X-Men run, which was in the actual normal monthly X-Men books that had to come out monthly, and probably did actually end up getting delayed, but basically they had to change artists because. That was their monthly X-Men
book. To be fair, he started with Frank Quitely, who notoriously has trouble hitting deadlines.
Yeah. John Cassaday also, his work process is quite... It's not slow, but it's painstaking. And Planetary had issues. That's the his real breakout book, yeah. Kind of had issues, especially where he was working on this, where issues of it came really late. But this one was always supposed to be a story slightly set apart. As mm-hmm. as I said, parts of it do take place in the Genosha that was destroyed. Genosha was destroyed in the new X-Men book. So it is still in the Marvel Universe.
It's very much in the continuity that Morrison set up. Absolutely.
But it's very much its own story as well. And yeah, it was kind of... the normal X-Men books were still coming out at the time that was coming out, and had kind of... were moving at a different pace, different stuff uh-huh. was happening in them, sort of thing. So
it builds... Obviously, the four books are essentially mini-arcs of their own, building up to a climax in the final trade, and in the final part of the trade, which is jaw-dropping.
Mm.
It's a huge... epic ending, to be honest with you, that to the point where I'm speechless.
Yeah.
No, but I'd enjoyed it, and I think John kept saying to me, "We'll keep going," because whereas Grant Morrison's run, I just couldn't put down. I just pored over every page, loved it. This doesn't draw you in quite as strongly as New X-Men. But it builds very subtly and very slowly to just a monumental final issue.
I think it was his first thing he really wrote. I think he'd worked on comics, worked on Buffy comics mm-hmm. with people. I think it was the first comic he really wrote, especially coming off the back of Buffy and Angel. And they went from having a Monster of the Week in the first couple of seasons of Buffy.
Sure.
To having these really long stories, where, to be fair, sometimes you'd go a couple of episodes that only had establishing plot lines and no real, nothing would really happen for two or three episodes at a time, which I know some people probably found unforgivable in TV and isn't what you expect to see in a monthly, in an ongoing comic as well. I think these were always designed to come out in these quite more slowly paced stories.
It would have been the sort of comic book that if I was buying it monthly, I might not have found as satisfying as I do reading it as a collected edition.
Yeah, definitely.
I totally agree. But, as I say, I'm torn now. If I were to recommend a jumping on point for X-Men, for someone, I am a little torn as to whether I'd recommend Morrison's New X-Men or Whedon's Astonishing X-Men. It's difficult. I think it very much depends on the person you're recommending. What I suggest you do is you talk to them about the sort of things they like. It's one of those things, if people like dense, intricately woven stories, then Morrison's probably the correct one. If people like slightly more mainstream, yeehaw sort of action.
Heroic action.
Heroic action. As well, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Then I think Whedon's Astonishing X-Men is probably for them. But both are excellent. And it's hard to say which one. This one certainly has, although the ending has some downbeat notes to it, it certainly leaves you feeling a lot less depressed than Morrison's run. And confused.
I think as far as what people are going to... Basically, if someone wants to have a jumping on point for the X-Men specifically, I think this series is probably the better bet, because once they read that series, they're going to be able to go and find other X-Men stories that are similar.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
there is nothing else really like New X-Men in the X universe. So it's sort of, I think that's the better, I think that is possibly the slightly better modern comic in that it's really... You're seeing things that you have never seen and hearing ideas that you've never heard before in New X-Men. Whereas this is just an excellent packaging up and putting together of stories that you wouldn't expect to see together, but that you might have seen before.
Oh, New X-Men's a masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this is very, very good.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Okay.
We like it.
I like it very much.
Did we see a really big hardback of the whole thing today?
I'm not sure. I didn't see it. And I was balking at the price of the fifth part of Astonishing X-Men, which is the Ghost Box story from Ellis's run. I had a little giddy fit and then said, screw this, I bought it on Amazon.
Yeah.
To which the guy in the comic shop agreed with me was the right thing to do. I'm not sure if not sure if he worked there, but
It's always very exciting. We always learn lots when we go into the comic shop.
We do. It's a super place.
That sounds excellent, James. I'm going to have to borrow the last couple of books off you because
I insist you take them with you.
Finished them.
The ending's fantastic, man. I tell you, it'll blow your brains out.
I already know what happens.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of did show you like
Look
what happened. Kieran Look how cool Gillen. This is.
Kieran Gillen showed me, expecting me to have read the.
I hate that guy.
It's in Sword, so it's sort of a plot point. I suppose, you know, Marvel might argue that once it's been in the continuity for a couple of years, it doesn't really count as a spoiler, but still.
Yeah, well, we hadn't spotlighted it at that point, so...
No.
I should say, my cat's at the back door, looking really grumpy. It's quite funny. She really is quite cross because she's been locked out.
She does look angry.
She knows we're talking about her now, and she went all nonchalant then, didn't she?
Like she's looking at a bird or something.
She said, oh, there's a bird up there.
Oh, look at meow.
Anyway, we should say goodbye, and then we should let the cat in.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think any of us are doing anything exciting this week, are we?
No, if you've got anything on, I'll probably be doing the thing that I said I was doing at the beginning of the week. I'm all over the World Cup, I'm sorry. Once every 4 years, stop being like that. Or have you gone into labour, Nick?
I might be going into labour. Really? Oh, did I mention the other week? I've started writing on elephant words again. I might have done.
Elephant words?
Yes, the excellent elephant words. Two new writers and me have been writing. You made me think of it with your World Cup. Ian Sharman, who is a comic creator, who writes on elephant words as well, wrote a World Cup piece that actually moved me.
Mm.
But yeah, so I'm writing on it again. So check out Elephant Words because I'm back on it again. Yeah. And my friend Oki and a lady called Alex have all started. It's all very exciting. I didn't sound very good. I sound like I'm being really insincere. Yeah. It is all very exciting.
He is quite excited about it.
If you want to, find Elephant Words, Google it. go to images, turn the save search off and type Tiger Woods Mistresses.
Yes.
And then you'll find it. No problem, I imagine. Do that at work, I suggest. Jane, what are you doing this week? Anything good?
I'm going to try and find a way to stop the green light without deactivating the fire alarm.
Yeah, no, you probably want to put up the green light because it's good to have a fire alarm.
Yes, but maybe not the green light.
Yeah, maybe you could just get used to it. Or...
No.
You could fill your flat with water.
Yeah.
Then you wouldn't need a fire alarm.
And then I might drown.
Well, I can't. I can't solve everything for you.
Sleep in an aqualung.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Like Jean Cousteau.
She's so ungrateful.
She is ungrateful.
I can't solve all of your problems.
Petulant and ungrateful.
Why not, Nick?
Because I'm not God. I've had to come to terms with that. That was a Garth Marenghi joke as well. I'm just ripping jokes off left, right and centre today.
I think a piece of electrical tape might do the job.
I probably wouldn't be putting electrical tape over any of your fire alarm, just in case it
only interferes with the
light. Okay. Yeah, do that. That's fine. Yeah, so Jane won't be with us next week. I will, though.
I'll be here. And yes, will I be here? Or am I going to be here?
Yeah, you'll be here. It'll be fine. It'll be you and me. It'll be no problem. It'll be fine. I think that's us for this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we're done.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening, listener.
Cheers.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Everybody look.